Then Beis Amud Aleph at the very top of the page. So the Mishnah says, Hamafkin Ma'os Eitzel Chaveiro, Tziraran Vehevshilan La'achorav, Osha Misaram Livno Ulevito Haktanim, V'na'al Bifneim Shalo Karai Chayav, Shalo Shimer Kederach HaShomrim, V'im Shimer Kederach HaShomrim Pater. This is pretty much ABCs of Perek HaMafkin. If a person deposits money by another person, and he doesn't do a good job of guarding the money. Now, what does that mean exactly? So either it means he ties it up in a cloth, he slings it over his shoulder, he gives the money to his five-year-old who's not going to guard it properly, he doesn't lock the gate correctly. So in all of those cases, he's chayav because he's not guarding the money properly. If he does a good job of guarding and the money gets stolen anyway, so then he's going to be putter. So the Gemara explains, Bishlama kulu shelo shimer kederech hashomrim elot sararan vehevshilan la'achorav mai havalei lameva. So I understand why the shomer is chayav if he gives the money to his five-year-old, or if he leaves the money, you know, whatever, lying out and fails to lock the gate. Okay, so he was negligent, so obviously he's chayav. But what's the problem with tying the money in a cloth and slinging it over your shoulder? What else was he supposed to do to protect the money? So the Gemara says, Amar Rava, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Amar Kra, Vitzarta HaKesef Biyadecha, The Gemara derives from a pasuk in Parshas Re'eh, when the Torah talks about the mitzvah of redeeming Meiser Sheni, the Torah says, V'tzarta ha-kesef biyadecha, that you bind the money in your hand, meaning, even though the money is bound up, which you would think would act as a sufficient form of guarding the money, the Gemara says that's not enough. It has to literally be physically in your hand, to be holding on to the money in order to qualify as a proper form of shmira. Then the Gemara says, V'amar Rabbi Yitzchak, La'olam yehi kaspo shel adam mat, a person should always have access to their money. Persons shouldn't invest all their money. They shouldn't put all their money away in a bank. They should have some money on them so that this way, in case they need it for whatever reason, they should be able to reach into their pocket and pull out the money. A person should divide their money into thirds. A third of their money they should bury in the ground, which we'll talk about in a second in the Gemara. A third of the money they should invest for business, and a third they should keep on them. They should have physically on them. V'amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Eina bracha mitzuya ela bedavar hasamui min ha'ayin, shene emar yitzav Hashem itecha es habiracha ba'asamecha. That bracha is only found on something which is concealed from the eye. Because the pasuk says in Parshas Kisavo that God commands blessing to come on your warehouses, on something which is stored away, which is concealed. If your wealth, if your possessions are concealed from others, it's not. It's going to be impervious to the ayin hara, so then your wealth is going to be blessed. Tana Devei Rabbi Yishmael, that's what the Gemara says right now. Ein habracha mitzuya, ela bedavar she'ein ha'ayin sholetes bo, shene amar yitzav Hashem itecha es habiracha ba'asamecha. The same idea, that the bracha is only found on something which is concealed. If you don't act in a gaudy fashion, that's when bracha is going to be present on your wealth and your possessions. Tanu Rabbanan, haholich lamod es gorno. A person goes to measure the grain in their granary. Omer yehi ratzon milefanecha Hashem Elokeinu shetishlach bracha b'maisei yadenu. You should recite the following bracha, that it should be your will, that there should be blessing, there should be bracha on my handiwork, on this pile of grain. Hischil lamod omer, baruch hasholech bracha bakri hazeh. Once he starts to measure the grain, he should make a bracha that God should send a blessing on this pile of grain. Madad v'achargach birech harezet tfilashav. If he measures and then recites a bracha, that's considered to be a vain prayer, a vain tfilah. Lefi she'ena bracha mitzuya lo bedavar hashakol, v'lo bedavar hamadud, v'lo bedavar hamanui, ela bedavar hasamui min ha'ayin, because as we keep on pointing out, bracha is only found on something which is concealed. If you've already counted out the grain, you already know exactly how much you have, then you can no longer recite the bracha. Amar Shmuel, Ksafim ein lahem shmira ela bakarka. Says Shmuel that the only way to guard your grain is, to guard your money is to bury it in the ground. That's the only surefire way to ensure that your money is not going to be stolen. Amar Rava, umode Shmuel the erev Shabbos ben hashmashos delo atrichuhu rabbanan. However, Shmuel concedes that if, let's say, a person comes to deposit money by you, they want to make you a shomer to watch their money, they come 5 minutes before Shabbos, right before Shkia, you don't have time to go dig a hole in the ground and bury the money there, so then everyone agrees that's okay. that it's considered a proper shmir, even if you don't bury it in the ground. However, v'ishah lemotzai Shabbos shir lemikberinu v'lo kavrinu michayav. Let's say Shabbos already ended, and now you're waiting around, you're dilly-dallying, and you didn't, you know, go ahead and dig the hole in the ground, and then the money got stolen, then you're going to be liable. Unless, the Gemara says, v'itzurva me'rabananu savar dilma miboy le'zuzei la'avdalta. Unless the person who deposits the money by you is a Talmud Chacham who doesn't have a lot of money, so then the reason why the shomer may not bury the money right away after Shabbos is because he thinks that the Talmud Chacham needs the money to purchase wine for Havdalah, so then if the money gets stolen, then the Shomer is not going to be held liable for that. However, the Gemara points out, but today, that the rummagers are common, there are people who are looking around for your money, they're going to dig holes in the ground to try and find the money that you stored underground. The only real way, says the Gemara, to guard your money today is by storing it in the rafters. You have to put it up in the beams on the top of your house. And then the Gemara takes it even a step further. And then apparently there was another stage in history where these frumai, these dismantlers were common. People would literally go into your house and they would start looking through the rafters to look for your money. So that wasn't good enough. So now you have to start hiding your money basically in between the cracks of the wall. Amar Rava, umo deshmua bekosel. Shmuel agrees that if you hide the money in between the wall or in the corners of the house, that's considered a sufficient degree of shmirah. But today, where the tfuchai, the people who would tap the walls, and they would use some kind of a mechanism to figure out whether there was money hidden in the walls, so even that is not going to be good enough. The only real way to protect your money today, says the Gemara, is to hide it either within a tefach of the ground or a tefach from the rafters. In other words, to put it in a place that's extremely difficult for a person who doesn't know that it's there to access the money. Amr li Rav Acha b'rei de Rav Yosef l'Ravashi. Hasam tanan chametz shenafla alav mapoles harehu kemivuar Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel omer kol she'en hakelev yachal lechapes acharav v'sana kama chafisas hakelev gemul tfachim hachamai mi ba'inan shlosha tfachim olo. So the Gemara draws a comparison between our question regarding, in other words, what's considered to be a valid degree of shmir when it comes to burying money. The Gemara relates this to the question of bir chametz. The Mishnah of Pesachim tells us, the Mishnah of Pesachim quotes a machlokas regarding chametz where a building collapsed on top of the chametz. The question is, in other words, do I have an obligation to now dig up the rubble to go look for the chametz to destroy it? So the Tanakhama says that once the building collapses on the chametz, that's it. The chametz is considered to be eradicated. It's destroyed. I'm not mechuyev to, you know, to start taking the shovel and start digging up and looking for the chametz to burn it. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel says, how do I know that chametz is considered eradicated if a dog won't start digging for it? If it's buried so deep in the ground that a dog won't dig for it, so then it's considered to be eradicated. So how deep is that? Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says that's 3 tfachim. If the chametz is buried at least 3 tfachim in the ground, so then you're not mechuyev to start digging in the ground to look for the chametz. The question is, does that standard carry over to here as well? What's considered to be the standard for money to be buried for it to be considered a proper shmir? Is it 3 tfachim or is it some other shear? So Amar Lei, Hasam Yishum Recha Ba'inam Gimel Tfachim, Hacham Yishum Ichasuye Meina Lo Ba'inam Gimel Tfachim. V'chama Amarafram Misichra Tefach. The Gemara says that the standards are different. The Mishnah in Pesachim that discusses burying your, or in other words, not searching for chametz, that was talking about a case. In other words, the reason why the Mishnah gave the shear of a dog looking for the chametz is because it needs to be buried to such a degree that it doesn't give off any odor. If the chametz gives off an odor, the dog is going to start looking for it and try to dig for the chametz. When it comes to burying money in the ground, the issue is not the odor. The issue is concealing the money from one site. So as long as it's buried a tefach in the ground, that's good enough. Whereas when it comes to chametz, it must be buried at least 3 tefachim underground in order to prevent the dog to start digging around looking for the chametz. Okay. Then the Gemara says, "Ahu gavra." So Reuven deposits money by Shimon. Osvinu betzrifa deurvene. So Shimon puts the money inside of some kind of a willow hut, and then ignu of the money gets stolen. So Amar Rav Yosef, Afal gav de leinyan ganve nitirusahi leinyan nura pshiusahi havatchilaso b'fshia v'sofo ba'ones chayev. In the first version of the Gemara, Rav Yosef comments that although placing the money in the willow hut is considered a sufficient degree of shmirah vis-a-vis geneva, meaning you did a good enough job to ensure that normally the money would not have been stolen. It was really a freak accident, or it was a 1 in a million chance that the money got stolen from this willow hut. However, it was considered negligence vis-a-vis a fire. Placing money inside of a willow hut does not make the money impervious to, or the willow hut impervious to catching on fire, and therefore you're still asking for trouble by placing the money there. Now, it turned out the money got stolen. Money, the money did not get destroyed in a fire, and hence this is a classic example of something we discussed many times before called Tchilaso Bepshia V'Sofo Ba'Ones. You started out with negligence, you placed the money in a scenario that you were making it likely that it would be destroyed by a fire. Ultimately, however, the money was stolen or destroyed vis-a-vis an ones, because in this case, again, you were not expecting the money to be stolen. You did your due diligence in terms of Shmira from Geneva. So in the first version of the Gemara says that you're chayev, because we paskin in this version of the Gemara that Tchilaso Bepshia V'Sofo Ba'Ones is chayev. Then the Gemara quotes a second version, V'Iko Da'amre, Afal Gav De Le'inyan Nura Pshiyusahi, Le'inyan Gadve Nitirusahi, Ustchilaso Bepshia V'Sofo Ba'Ones Pater. The second version says the exact opposite. The Hilchasa Tchilaso Bepshia V'Sofo Ba'Ones Chai. The Gemara paskins like the first version, that Tchilaso Bepshia V'Sofo Ba'Ones is chayev, which means that if Reuven deposits money by Shimon, and Shimon places the money inside of a hut in such a way that it prevents it normally from being stolen, but it's being placed in a situation where, in theory, it could be affected by a fire, and the money ends up getting stolen, which again is an ones because that was not the norm. That's not what you anticipated. Shimon is still going to be chayiv in that case. Okay, Gemara has another story. Hahu gavra da afkid zuzei gavra chayiv. Again, another case. Reuven deposits money by Shimon. Amar le havli zuzai. He says, "Give me my money back." Amar le lo yadana hichosvino. I don't know where I put the money. Anytime you say that you don't know where you put the money, that's called negligence. You, in other words, you're the shomer. Of course you should know where you put the money. So now you, Shimon, would have to go compensate Reuven. Hahu gavra da afkid zuze gavei chavrei ashleminu liime the osivinu bekar delisa veigna. The Gemara has another very strange story here. So again, Reuven deposits money by Shimon, but Shimon, instead of keeping the money for himself, let's say Shimon lives in wherever, he lives in an unsafe neighborhood. He's afraid that the money's going to get stolen, but his mother lives in a nice upscale area and she's not afraid that the money's going to get stolen. So he goes ahead and gives the money to his mother, and his mother puts the money inside of a chest, but the money gets stolen from the chest anyway. Now, the thing is that Shimon never told his mother that this wasn't his own money, right? She just assumed it was Shimon's money that she was guarding. Amar Rava, Heichini Dainu Dayani Lahaidina. How should we judge such a case? Namele Lidi Dezil Shalim, if you're going to tell Shimon to go compensate Reuven, Amar Kola Mavkin Adas Ishto Vanavu Mavkin. So Shimon will deflect that argument by setting a Gemara that we saw last week that tells us that whenever you deposit an item by someone, the assumption is that not only is that shomer, that person, entitled to use the item or to guard the item, but anyone who's part of his family, part of his household. So his mother, presumably, is also included in that. So that's not a legitimate taina. On the other hand, the Gemara says, Nema Leili, Ime Zili Shalimi, if you tell the mother that she's responsible to pay, Amrush, so the mother will say to us, Lo Amarli Delav Di Deininu De Ekberenu. That, in other words, she'll say, my son never told me that this wasn't his money. Had I known this was someone else's money, I would have buried it in the ground. I wouldn't have just left it in the chest of my attic. So how does Shimon respond to that? Nema Leia Milo Amarlo. So then we'll say to Shimon, how come you never told your mother that this wasn't your money? So Amar Kol Shekein Dechia Mina La Didininu Tfeimiz Darabahu. So Shimon will tell us that, what do you mean? In other words, I specifically didn't tell that to my mother because I assumed she would guard my possessions more zealously than if I told her it was someone else's. If it was someone else's, she's like, okay, whatever, I'll put it in the chest. If it's my possessions, if it's my money, then of course she would guard it even more carefully. So the Gemara says, you're right. Ela Amar Rava Mishtava Ihu Dahan. So Shimon takes a shvua that he gave the money to his mother to watch. And the mother takes a shvua that she put the money in the chest, that she did her due diligence, and then they're both putter, they're both off the hook because neither of them can be held liable for what happened to the money. Then the Gemara has another story. Hahua Petrup.
Yes.
Yeah.
Did you say the mother was living in a different house than the...
I mean, the Gemara never specifies where she was living. I was just saying as an example. In other words, it's not... In other words, it could be she was living with him, could be she was living somewhere else. Doesn't really make much of a difference in terms of the story, because the assumption always is, as we pointed out last week, that whenever you give an item to someone to watch as a shomer, the assumption is that item is not only guarded by the shomer himself, but any family member is also included in that
shomer. No, the reason I brought it up, because I assumed that was in the same house, because fine, you give it to a shomer, ever living in the house.
I mean, again, it's possible. It could be that it's in the same house. The Gemara never specifies whether the mother lives in the house or not. Again, I don't think that really makes much of a difference whether she's living in the house or not. It's just a question of, is she a person who is entitled to also be a shomer on the item? That's really the issue here. Okay, so the Gemara says, Ahu apetrupa diyasme, dizavan luhu torah liyasme, umasre levakra, Lo havu lekachi v'shinin lemicha v'mis. Where's the following story? There was a guy who was an apotropos. He was a steward, a guardian on the assets or the estate of some orphans. And the job of the apotropos is to try to invest the money of the orphans to make sure that they get the most out of the estate. So he decided, I'm going to use some of the money from the estate. I'm going to purchase an ox. Okay, he thought it was a good investment. The problem was that the ox that he bought happened to have no teeth. And if you have no teeth, obviously you can't really eat much. So he bought an ox with no teeth. Now again, maybe he didn't realize at the time the ox had no teeth. He gives the ox over to a bakra. A bakra is basically a shepherd, but for cattle, for oxen. So the official English term is a cowherd. So he gives the ox over to this bakra. And again, as we said, the ox had no teeth. And the cowherd fed the ox, but the ox died because it couldn't really eat any of the food. So Amar Rami Bar Chama, how should we adjudicate this case? Name a leila apetrapa zil shalim. If you tell the steward, the guardian, to go pay. Amar ana levakra misarte. So in other words, he'll argue, I gave the ox over to the cowherd. How was I supposed to know that it didn't have any teeth and that it wasn't eating? Name a levakra zil shalim. If you tell the cowherd to pay, so Amar ana bahadi Torah ukimte uchle shadaili lo have a yadina de lo acha. He's saying, I have hundreds and thousands of oxen that I'm watching. So I stored this ox together with all my other ones. I gave food to it, but it wasn't like I was looking at every single ox to make sure it was eating. I thought whatever. I gave it food. I thought it was eating. I didn't realize that the ox had no teeth. So the Gemara says, hang on a second. Michti, bakra, shomer, sachar, diasmehu, ibai, leila, ayune. The Gemara says, but isn't that, in other words, isn't that job incumbent on the coward? Isn't it his job to make sure that the animals are taken care of? He's basically a shomer, sachar. He's getting hired by the apotropos to watch the Yisomim's ox. So it's his job to make sure that the ox is eating. So how is that a legitimate excuse? So the Gemara says, no. Ii kapseida, diasmeh, hachinami, v'hacha, b'may, askinan, de lake up seda the yasme, the ashkehu limari de sora, the shakul yasme zuze mine. The Gemara says normally you would be right. In a normal circumstance where there's a loss to the Yisomim because the ox that the apotropos bought had no teeth and it's not eating and it died. So normally we would say yes, that the brunt of the loss has to be borne by the coward. He's responsible to pay compensation. The only reason why he's not chayiv here is because they track down the original owner of the ox, the guy who sold them that ox originally, and he compensated the Yisomim. So now the Yisomim don't have any titus anymore because they got compensated for the ox that they had bought that the apotropos had bought initially. So then the next question, of course, is Elaman Katoy. So who exactly is making a claim now? Because the Yisom got their money back. So who's making any sort of taina here? So the Gemara says, Mari Desori Katoy. So maybe you'll argue that the original owner is the one making the taina, that he wants money back. The problem is, he was supposed to tell us in the first place that the ox had no teeth. So what kind of a claim is he putting forth here? So the Gemara says, well, my modina lay made the yada the mekachtos habis. The Gemara says, what are you talking about? This guy knew from the outset that the ox had no teeth, and he was trying to pull a fast one on us. It was a mekachtos. So of course he's not going to tell us anything. So the Gemara says, no, it's not true. Bisafsira dizavan mehacha umizabin lahacha hilkach mishtaba ihu delo have a yada umishalim bakro de me baser bezol. The Gemara says this circumstance is not nefarious. It wasn't that the guy knew that he had an ox that had no teeth and he was trying to pull a fast one and trying to just pass it off to the Yisomim. This is what the Gemara calls a safsira. He was basically a middleman. He was a trader. He was a guy who would buy and sell animals all the time, but it wasn't like he stopped every single ox, opened their mouth, looked and see if they had teeth. That wasn't what he did. He would just pass an ox on and sell it to the next guy. So this guy had literally, in other words, he legitimately had no idea that the ox had no teeth. So he takes a shavua saying that I had no idea that the ox, what was that?
But
the Gemara is assuming here that that he's not expected to know if the guy has he buys and sells thousands of oxen every week. He's not going to know the status of every single one. And in this specific instance, we say that he takes a shmua and then he's able to collect the cheapest market value of meat from the cowherd from the bakra. Okay, then the Gemara says, "Ahu gavra da avkid kishusa gabe chavri." So again, another story. Reuven has a bunch of hops that are used to make beer. He deposits his hops by Shimon to watch. The problem is that Shimon also has hops that he uses to brew his own beer. So now the hops are going to get mixed up. So Amar Leila Sarse Mehai Rami. So Shimon has his own personal beer brewer on hand, and he turns to his beer brewer and says, "Make sure you only produce beer from this pile of hops over here." So Azar Alamida. So the brewer doesn't listen, and he produces beer from the other pile of hops, from the one that was actually Reuven's. So Amar Rav Amram Heichini Dainu Dayane Lahidin. How should we adjudicate this case? Name a Leila. l'didei zil shalim, if we tell the shomer to go and pay, so amar ana amri lemehai rame. So the problem is, he says, what do you mean? I told the brewer to use my hops, and he used the wrong one. So why is that my fault? Namely, let's start with zil shalim. If you're going to tell the brewer to go pay compensation to Reuven, amar lo amar lemehai rame umehai lo tirme. He can argue back to us. The brewer can deflect that and say that Shimon never told me not to use the other pile. He just said use this one. Maybe he was giving me advice. He never said don't use those hops. However, the Gemara qualifies that, let's say, for example, the two piles of hops were not equidistant to one another. Let's say the pile of hops that belonged to Shimon were right next to where the brewer was, and the pile of hops that belonged to Reuven were a 5-minute walk away on the other side of the field, and it's taking the brewer a long time to come back and bring the hops back to Shimon to start producing the beer. So then Shimon obviously realizes that he's going to get the hops that belong to Reuven, and if Shimon doesn't say anything, so then he in fact is going to be held liable because he knows that those are not his own hops and he doesn't say anything. So the Gemara says, you're right, b'delosha, it must be that the case was that either the two piles were equidistant or that he didn't go to the further pile, that maybe he went to the pile that belonged to Shimon. So the Gemara says, hang on a second. So if my say the Ika, the Hakam Mishtar Shele. Well, at the end of the day, what loss is there? In other words, even if it was true that the brewer went ahead and took the hops from Reuven's pile, why can't Shimon just exchange his own hops, right? Just give him his own hops back to compensate for whatever Reuven took. I'm sorry, to compensate for whatever the brewer took. So Amar of Sama Berei Derava to have a Shichra Chala. So one answer, one possibility is that Shimon's beer has fermented and turned to vinegar. So now we can no longer take compensation from the beer because the beer is worthless. Rav Ashi Amar Bechisei U'mishalim Le'demei Kisei. Alternatively, you can suggest that the case is that the hops have thorns in them. If the hops have thorns, then they're also worthless. And you can't take compensation from the other hops that have thorns in them.